Welcome back to the Founders Lounge, guys. I'm Don, your host. Last week, I talked about a special little thing that I've been wanting to do for a while now, and I don't know why I haven't done it sooner, but I mentioned the fact that a lot of our owners within Clean Eats, the franchise company, have incredible, inspiring stories behind them that, for whatever reason, we just haven't shared up until now. And last week, we had Mike Parker on, who owns our Raleigh territory in North Carolina. And this week we have, in my opinion, probably the biggest savage in our company. In terms of savage meaning, that's a term of endearment, Anna, by the way.
I love it.
serial entrepreneur and just an all-around awesome human being. And I think her story on how she got to us and what she's done since she's been a part of Clean Eats is just... it's a truly awesome and inspiring story, so I can't wait to have you share it with everybody and so they can get to know you. Thanks for taking I know you're busy, and it's a kind of an inside joke with us that Anna never, ever answers the phone when I call, so the fact that you're taking an hour out of your day, I feel honored.
I call back, Don. I just don't pick up on the first call.
It's okay. I'm just kidding.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm excited.
Yeah, of course. Well, I know a lot of our owners within Clean Eats kind of know a little bit about you, but there's a lot of people that don't. So I guess start by telling everybody who you are, where you came from, and then how you found Clean Eats. Because I think your story and your why and your time before Clean Eats is just as cool and inspiring story as all of the stuff that you've done since you've came on board, which is that's part two of this whole conversation, which is incredible.
I feel like part one is like more relevant, just like Mike Parker about, you know, his like everything pre-Clean Eats. It's like post-Clean Eats is exciting. It's thrilling when, you know, you see success and then that success can multiply and grow. But like the back part is, I think, a lot more exciting and more relatable to people that like, how would I ever get to like part two, you know? So I like that. I went to college, you know, normal, all, you know, experience there, graduated, got a job out of college. And I just was really, I was not happy in my job. And I remember at the time that was like super scary because I had gotten a really good career out of college. And I kind of felt like my back was against the wall when I didn't like it. Like there was no other options and I should have been grateful for this really, you know, I had a lucrative opportunity out of college, at least for my age and experience level. And I didn't like the job. I was in outside sales. I was driving 1,000 miles a week. And I kind of found myself getting like really, really low in that position and like underperforming when that was never like my expectation for myself or the expectation the company had when they hired me.
Weren't you selling cigarettes?
They knew I was underperforming, but I knew I was. Like, I knew I was really kind of doing the bare minimum, and that wore on me because I always felt like I was supposed to be someone that excelled, but I just, in this role, I was like bringing out like the worst of me. What I did was I channeled into fitness. I wish I could channel into fitness again now, like I could back then, but now my lazy ass needs to get it together. But back then, you know, I took like, I needed something that, and that work wasn't, you know, wasn't providing it. And so I kind of proved to myself that I was still disciplined, that I was still, you know, a hardworking person in the gym, instead of in my job. And so I got really into it. I hired a coach at my gym and learned how to lift weights. And I know Mike talked a lot about his bodybuilding story. I think for some of us, I feel like maybe like more the OG people in Clean Eats, the bodybuilding element was like, there was synergy there. A lot of people had tried that. So I got into that. I did bodybuilding for about 5 years. I was very average, very mediocre, but it's still just getting up there and doing the process of a show is just super, you know, there's a lot of discipline that comes into it. And I think you just kind of, I fell in love with lifting. I fell in love with the gym and all of that. And so I got to the point where I wanted to open my own gym, but I didn't have the money to do it. I was, I think, 23, 24. And so I put together like a PDF I put together like a slideshow. I had done research on all these different independent gyms versus like franchise concepts, what I thought maybe an initial investment would be. I had no experience in this, so it was really like a stretch for me to try to put something together. And I come from a family without entrepreneurs, like, you know, just, you know, 9 to 5, like a teacher mom. And then my dad just, you know, businessman his whole life. And they were close to retirement and we were very middle class, like, you know, never wanted for anything, but certainly nothing extravagant. We never went on like family vacations or anything. We were just middle. And so I had no idea like if they even had like anywhere near the money for this. Like, I'm just like shot in the dark here going to my parents being like, hey, I think that our area needs a gym. I am young and I have a lot of energy and effort to put in. I will work for free. I'll work 8 a.m. to 8 p.m., 6 days a week, Monday through Saturday. I'll make it successful. I promise you. I will move home. I will quit my job. You know, I have no bills besides like my cell phone and my car insurance and like one student loan I think I had. So I was like, if you'll just pay those 4 bills, you don't have to pay me. Like, but I need you to fund this. Like, I don't have any. And then my parents had a wedding fund for each of their daughters. I'm like, I don't need a wedding. Put that shit in the gym. So like, that's not important. Like, please open this gym. So they like, that was my contribution was the money they had in an account for my wedding went to, that was my financial contribution. But my dad was like, no way. Like, that's high risk. Like, we're only 10 years from retirement. Like, we have no experience in entrepreneurship. Like, there's just no way. Like, this is not feasible. It's not realistic. And I kind of kept coming at him from different angles. And I started getting my dad healthy. I signed him up for his first 5K. He lost a lot of weight. I signed him up for his first half marathon. I gave it to him as a Christmas gift. And he's like, what the fuck Christmas gift is this? I don't want to run. This is a horrible gym. Like, I don't want to run a half marathon. But I paid for it. And he's the kind of guy, if money's been spent, he's got to see it through. So he ran his first half marathon. And I think in that process of him getting healthier, it kind of like, he suddenly, like, you know how it is with fitness. You get into, you start feeling better. All, you know, your interest in the industry and just in general is peaked. And I think I kind of got him right where I wanted him. And my mom was sort of on board with me. She just felt like, she's like, you know, you've always been meant for business. We've always known that. If it's not working in your current career, maybe this is the route you're supposed to take. So eventually they say yes, which was just this crazy thing, like, for our family. And then I had to move home. I had to quit my career. I had to move home. You know, I lost my independence. I'm back like I'm 17 living with my parents again. I lost my source of income. I gave all the money that I did have to the project. So it's like I was living on allowance again. You know, it was weird, but we got this gym opened and I was back. Like, that was my, you know, I was working 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. I created a running team with over 150 members. We went and did races in the community. I created a powerlifting team with 50 members and we went and competed like in Vegas nationally. We became one of the top 1% of any times in the system. We were a club platinum club that they have the different metrics for if you're in the top 20% or top 5% of the system. And we always performed well and we won a few national awards and it was just like, it was the best. It was everything. I was obsessed. I was so proud of it. I lived it. I breathed it. I had literally no work-life balance whatsoever. And my dad was able to quit his job within 6 months because the business did so well. So he was 10 years away from retirement in his career, but by choosing to do this with me, he ended up being able to basically retire within 6 months. He still helped a lot at the gym, but not in a significant hour per week capacity. So yeah, I was like thriving, loving it. It was so cool. And then you kind of get going and, you know, I think I was like maybe 5, 6, 7 years in. And while I was an owner, I was a 10% owner because my parents brought the capital. I brought the sweat equity. I was 10%, which was fair. I got a fair salary. It was a fair shake. And I will always thank my parents for doing that for me because they paved the road to my future. But, you know, once you get 5, 6, 7 years in, you kind of start looking around like, man, every dollar this business makes, my parents get 90 cents. I get 10 and my parents are hanging out, you know, at home chilling and I'm in here 12 hours a day. So I kind of start looking around going, huh, I think maybe I need something else and I need to pave a path for myself. You know, never with the intention to say, you know, peace out mom and dad, but I started opening my eyes and I'll never forget Jackie and Jamie out of Canton, who I was friends with from the Anytime Fitness concept because Jackie had an Anytime Fitness. posted on their social media, "We're opening our second Clean Eats, Cuyahoga Falls, here we come." And I looked at that picture, and I remember I was sitting in Anytime Fitness at my desk when that came on my Instagram page. And I looked at it and go, well, shit, she's not opening a second Anytime. She's opening a second Clean Eats. You know, why? Why? She's got to be making money. She's got to be, something's got to be going right. But I had no restaurant experience. I mean, I had been a server. I think I had been a bartender at that time. Yeah. But I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. I could barely cook for myself at home. I mean, I suck. Like, I can't do this. So I went down to visit Jackie in Canton. Mike and I, my husband and I went down. And I looked around and I was super intimidated. I'm like, I don't know what this is. I don't know what that, like, I'll never forget this. I think I've told you this, Don, before. There's like a few sentences that have been said to me in my life. Three of them that really stand out that I swear to, like, absolutely changed the course of my life. And the sentence from Jackie Rothman was, "Dude, you can do it. Just fake it till you make it." And people hate that quote. They're like, that quote sucks. I'm like, when she told me that, just fake it till you make it, I'm like, well, shit, okay, I could fake it till I make it. I could figure it the fuck out, you know? I could do that. And so if she had said to me, which in the year coming, I told her many times she should have said to me, because I had a hard time at first, but if she had said, dude, it's so hard, there's no way you can do it, man. Like, it's so hard. Like, you got to have restaurant experience. Like, I wouldn't recommend it, like, without experience. Like, if she had given me, like, an inch to just walk away, I would have walked away. Because I was so intimidated to open a restaurant with no, you know. I was almost, I don't know if I was looking for her to give me that or not. But, like, if she had just anything, if she had said, yeah, maybe you could pull it off, but I don't know, it's a lot of work, like, if she had given me any window to be like, oh, I can't do this, I honestly believe I would have walked away.
You think so?
But she was like, what?
You think so?
Yeah. Oh, my God. I mean, you remember the first day I got my keys and I called you crying and I'm like, I just realized I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. Like, I just realized I have no idea what I'm doing. Like, opening a restaurant with no restaurant experience is so scary. But she was literally, she was like, dude, she's like, dude, do it. She was like, yeah, do it, man. Like, you're cool. Like, just fake it till you make it. You figure it out. She's like, they'll teach you. You're good. And I'm like, you really think so? She's like, yeah. She's like, you're a great operator. You'll do great. Do it. And originally, I had just wanted Jackie to open a Clean Eats in Mentor for me to be a customer of. I was like, dude, will you please open one? I don't want to drive to Canton anymore. Because I was a customer. And so that was just one of those pivotal sentences of my life. She said, you can do this. Do it. And so... so then I'm looking at our, and like, we barely qualify. I don't think we really did qualify, to be frank. I think you guys were just lenient on your auditing of qualifications back then.
Back then, we probably absolutely were.
Yeah. So financially, like, we had some money in the bank. You know, my husband had a full-time career. I was doing, you know, I'd been doing my, you know, we'd always paid me a fair salary at any time. And I was getting like a 10% distribution from my gym. But we were very, I mean, you know, we didn't have a ton of money. We weren't, you know, we were just normal. I would say normal, two people working type of situation. But, we had like just enough capital, probably not quite enough liquid capital to bring to the table, but really good credit. And I'm like, all right, I'm going to finance the shit out of this. But really even that, like, I remember I couldn't really get business loans. So I remember I financed our Clean Eats on the money that we had and maxing out 3 credit cards that I had 12 months interest free on. So I bet on myself. I'm like, okay, I got 12 months to pay these off or else I'm screwed because the interest rate on, you know, consumer credit cards is just horrible. And that's how we opened. And one memory I have is right before we opened, it was like 2 days before we opened, I went to Sam's Club to buy bottled water because we needed it in our open air. And my card got declined because I'd maxed out my third and final credit card. I was like, okay, I will pay cash. So
let me stop you right there and kind of go backwards and catch everybody up. So you had a job in outside sales, which was that cigarettes? I don't remember. I get you. Yes. And Ashley. Yeah. Ashley, yeah. Bader. Ashley Bader, one of our owners in Georgia, she worked for a beer distributor, and I always get you guys mixed up. So you quit that. Borrowed money from your parents to open an Anytime Fitness, got that business to the top 1% of their system, and then made the decision to buy a restaurant with no restaurant experience.
Yeah.
And got it open by maxing out 3 credit cards.
Yeah.
I wanted to repeat that because when people hear that for the second time, they're going to be like, holy shit. That's just crazy to me.
You know, it's one of the blessings about like kind of being like young and dumb. Like it's funny. Like I never really thought about like financial failure. Like, I mean, I thought about like, you know, you know, you're just, when you have that like blind confidence of like a 26 year old, like you're just like, I'll figure this out. You know, I'll get it. I'll just, it'll work. And even now, you know, what, 7 years later, like I feel like I'm more cautious and I'm more aware of like the things that can go wrong. But, you know, I mean, it's so cool now. I mean, that Clean Eats, our Clean Eats, when we opened it, did absolutely phenomenal. It still does wonderful. And it paved the way for everything for me. We paid off those credit cards, I think, in like 5 or 6 months. You know, that business, our ROI was 100% within 6 months, like, because we got it done. So, you know, which is it's not really realistic anymore, but that was one of the, you know, that's one of the perks you get of investing in a franchise when it's in its infancy. You took a risk, you know, they take a risk on you. You took a risk on them. And the reward for me was setting the stage for like, in, you know, an incredible future. And I've said that to you and Yvonne before, like, and to Jackie, like, you're so grateful looking back. Like, it's just incredible to look at, you know, what that has allowed us to do and allowed me to do in my life. It's just so cool.
Well, and not to get into, I don't want to talk restaurant lingo and lose everybody, but your first location was what we call a second generation spot, right? Wasn't it a breakfast place or something?
Oh, it was a family. Oh, it was, yeah, it was a family restaurant. It was rough.
Greasy Spoon is what we call them. Yeah. I remember coming there and touring it, and I'm thinking in the back of my head, this is great, but this is going to be a lot of work.
Oh my God. And we couldn't afford a general contractor. And so we got, God love this man. His name is Rod. We were a one man show. It was my husband, Mike, learning the trades as he went. Like, he's like an artist. He worked at the Cleveland Museum of Art. He's not a tradesman. So he's learning because he's just going in with Ron after work every day, just figuring out how to put this thing together. That's something that is just absolutely out of my skill set. Like, I'm not mechanically inclined. I'm not like technology inclined. So all of that stuff was so overwhelming to me. And that's when I remember, I don't know if I called you or I texted you, but I was sobbing in this horrible, moldy, disgusting footprint of a seventh gen restaurant. I mean, it had been a million things before the family restaurant that went out of business. And I remember just being like, it is really setting in right now that I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. Like, I felt all of the weight of that. Like, they're like, where does this go? I'm like, I don't know. I don't, what even is that? I don't even know what that does. Like, I just, oh my God. I mean, it's just, it absolutely crazy. But it worked out.
Well, we always say, I mean, we still say that today. I mean, that's the beauty of our concept, is we would almost prefer to get people in that don't have restaurant experience, because we can train them the revenue streams of our business and the cogs in the wheel and how they work. We've kind of gotten a lot better at that since the day that you went through that. I think if you can remember back to some of our systems back then, they probably weren't nowhere near up to par to what they are now. We've came a long way since that location particularly has opened. I know that, but.
Well, that's kind of, you know, and like when I talk to new franchisees and like, you know, yeah, now the initial investment is more and things are more legitimate. But but what you said there, that's why it's that risk reward thing. Like, not everybody was buying Clean Eats franchises back then because you guys were new. You were, you know, and then what you get with a franchise system that's in its infancy is you get maybe a little rougher road when it comes to processes and procedures. But what I gained from that was paying off my ROI in 5 months. And, you know, so it was like, I took the risk. You guys had a great concept, but you were still so young that you're like, hey, it's going to, you know, it's not going to be a perfect road. We're still building. But for me, like, I know that if I had come around Clean Eats now, I wouldn't be able to do it. I wouldn't have been financially qualified to do it at that time in my life. And then B, you know, yeah, my store would have been maybe more legit, like have a real contractor do it and, you know, have a real, but, you know, it's one of those things. I think I got out of the brand at that time what I put in. And so, yeah, it was a little harder. But, you know, it set the stage for everything I could do thereafter. So, you know, to me, it all makes sense. Like, it makes sense that you guys weren't where you are now because it was a smaller investment. And, you know, so it kind of it all balanced out.
Well, that's a hard thing. That is still today, especially today and especially right now, meaning the environment that we're living in financially and with interest rates and everything like that. Yvonne and I still battle with that mindset. We still battle with, I don't mean this in a negative way, but we battle with our real estate guys and the equipment companies and the vendors that we use because we still encourage our owners to go that route. We still encourage them to, yes, it's a little bit harder, you know, it's a little bit more legwork on their end to find a used restaurant and to kind of flip one over, as we call it, or do a second gen and just rebrand it and go with it. Sometimes now that's gotten to be where that's a little bit more complicated.
Yeah.
But like you said, there's a little bit more, one, there's more meaning behind it. Two, it's definitely can be cheaper. It's just a little bit more, you got to put more energy into it and more love and more care. But, you know, we battle because we can't, that's not always possible now.
Right. Yeah.
It's not the way that it used to be. And it kind of annoys us at times. We're like, man, why are these guys spending, you know, I think our average equipment or our average project costs right now are between $500,000 and $600K. Whereas yeah. back then when you were doing it, it was, I know it was sub 400.
Yeah.
Because I remember the day we crossed over 400, I almost shit myself. I was like freaking out. I'm like, there's no way I can let somebody spend $400,000 on one of these. Well, I wish it would go back to that now, but we're way past that. But some of those sentimental things that you were talking about, are, I wish to God they were still that way.
Yeah. But I will say, I mean, you know, and I've always said, like with Clean Eats, it's like, the opportunity for revenue and the opportunity to bring a lot of that revenue down to the bottom line as an owner. I mean, that is why I've been able to open a lot more concepts and why I've been able to grow. Because, and then that's something that is, I don't know. I think it's, you don't see it. I mean, it's, you don't see it in many other concepts. So, you know, it's one of those things. Yeah. If people are brave enough to max out some credit cards and take on that risk, then there's that reward. And so, regardless of it being, you know, 200 versus 400. Obviously, my second location, we had to pay a lot more. Personally, I enjoyed the process of working with a general contractor and knowing that my shit is good. But you know, it's just part of it. It's ultimately, you know, you take that risk as an entrepreneur, and then you know you got to rely on your franchisor and then yourself to build a team, and then that return comes. And you know, I know that Clean Eats has put in a lot of due diligence to ensure that the return is worth the investment, even as the investment has increased. So that's the game.
Well, that's a perfect segue into the second part of the conversation, which is the massive empire that you've built since the day you opened that first store. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, so you know how I said there was like a couple sentences in my life that have like, I feel like have changed the course of my life. So I feel like these kind of relate to what I've done thus far. So I'm going to tell you one more of them. So when I was still at Anytime Fitness, which segue, we ended up selling our Anytime in 2021. You know, I kind of told my parents like, hey, I'm sort of forging my own path at this point. And I had been so ingrained in that business for so long. We had it for 9 years that I didn't feel like any type of even moderately absentee ownership model, like with me having like a really strong, powerful management team and training team. I just, my members expected more of me. They wanted to see me in there. They were used to that. And so I didn't feel like because I had built a foundation of me being there so much for them, that the gym would continue to succeed with me, you know, having a really rockstar team, but not necessarily being in the business all the time. And so with that in mind, instead of trying to like buy my parents out, we just decided as a family, it was time to sell. So anyways, I segue to that. But so I was in my office at Anytime Fitness and I had a member come in. His name is Ian. And I'll never forget this because at this moment I had made the decision that I was just going to have this one anytime. I was like, this is a good life for me. I like the gym. I love my members. Like I feel fulfilled. Admittedly, still kind of struggled with a work-life balance. Like, you know, I pretty much lived for Anytime. All my weekends were about races or powerlifting meets or what my members were doing. And so that was still kind of an issue, but I was, you know, I kind of like just, I'm like, all right, I'll be a 10% owner of this. You know, I'll give gym tours and sign up people for training, and that'll be my life. And then this guy, Ian, came into my office and he said, and he was talking about his family, and his parents had opened a few daycares. And his parents had basically like decided to retire, and they had like either given him, or he had purchased, or somehow transferred all ownership to him as their son. And they moved out to Arizona to retire. I think in their like 40s or young 50s, he had said. So he was my age, and that was impactful to me because I was looking at my peer, and he's like, yeah, I inherited the 2 daycares from my parents. It might have been 3. I don't remember. And then he's like, and I'm building out 3 more. And I was like, shit, you are? I'm like, that sounds like exhausting. Like, you're doing that? Like, you know, why not just keep the 2 or 3 that you have or whatever? And he's like, because I'm young. I have a hard work ethic. I've got the energy right now. So I'm going to bust my ass now. And then I'm going to retire in my 40s if I want to. Or if I don't want to, I'll just keep growing. But I'm going to set the stage right now. And when I'm young, I'm hard. There's no reason I should be sitting on my ass at home in this decade of my life. I can't remember if he was like in his upper 20s or young 30s at this time. And he's like, I'm going to grind, and then I'll decide, you know, and then I can gift myself with whatever I want in the future. And I just remember it hit me like a knife in the heart, because I was like, it felt like he was, and I know he didn't mean it like this, but I felt like what he was speaking to me, like, you've chosen to sit on your ass and have one business. It's easy for you. It's up and running. You've chosen to just sit with this, and just, even though you're young, even though you're in your, you know, whatever I was, 20s, I must have been in my 20s. You know, you've decided that that's it for you. You're done. You're not going to have any goals. You're not going to try to reach anything else. You're not going to try to, you know, accomplish anything else or grow or build more. And he's like, but that's not for me. I'm going to grind. And I just remember feeling like personally attacked. Like, and he didn't mean it that way. I don't think he ever knew that. I got to tell him one day that I interpreted it that way. But I just sat with that, and I was like, shit, I suck. Like, he's going to go grow all these daycares because he's young and he knows how to grind. And I'm going to sit in this gym and have this like Groundhog Day thing where every single day I'm just going, hey, welcome to Anytime. Let me give you a tour. And let me, you know, and just continue to play out my life on repeat instead of like striving for more. So I think to this day, you know, now I have owned outright or partnered on 10 brick and mortar businesses by the age of 34. I'm now 35. That is because of that conversation with Ian. Isn't that like, it's, there's certain things that just strike a chord with me, like statements that are said to me that just stick with me. And then another one was my twin sister, and she definitely, I've never told her, but I was battling with this 1090 me and my parents thing mentally, and I always understood it and respected it. And I always say my parents forged a path for me. They invested in me when I don't think anyone else would have. They gave me 10% ownership in a business that I really had no business owning 10% of from a capital standpoint. So the way it all played out was perfect. They paid me fairly. My salary was fair. But you know how, like, when you're making 10% and you're putting in all the work, you know, 5, 6, 7 years in, you start to go, well, shit, you know, damn, I don't know. This arrangement isn't really working for me anymore. And I remember expressing that to my twin sister. And she's like, yeah, you know, I gotta be honest, you've always been really good at sales. You've always been like the business minded person. She's like, I just always really thought you were gonna be rich, like rich, rich. And I was like, damn, me too. She's like, you know, I was gonna be a teacher. Now my sister, my one sister's a doctor. She's like, you know, we're all gonna do well. She's like, but I just always thought you'd be that, you know, business person that just was like really rich. And I was like, I kind of always wanted to be that business person that's really rich. Like, and it's just funny. Like, I'm sure, I don't even know if she remembers saying that to me, but I think at the time I was looking into getting into some like little side janky business. I'm embarrassed to say it. I think it might've even been an MLM. I was just trying to figure out how I could make more money, you know, and how I could do more. And I didn't know what to do. And I knew I couldn't at the time do another Anytime Fitness on my own, nor did that path look even possible because of the energy and effort it took to sustain the one I had. So anyways, that's the backstory. These two things that were said to me was, you know, hey, why are you like, you know, sitting down on your ass in your 20s instead of trying to grow your empire? And then number two, my sister saying, I thought you were going to be rich. I'm surprised you're just kind of like, you know, doing fine. But so those two things lit a fire under me. And that comes to your question or your statement about like part two of my journey. which has been this just like endless striving for more, 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 like growing, 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 growing with our, my Clean Eats, growing to a second location with Clean Eats, dabbling with Smoothie King franchise, opening an independent bar, dabbling with Barrio Tacos and Tequila, where we have three locations of that concept. And then most recently getting into retail with a Vitamin Shoppe franchise. So it's just been this whirlwind of, I don't know what the hell I'm doing, honestly. People are always, why do you make these choices? I'm like, I don't know. They just kind of like, it's just, it's my ADD, you know, and display. But so, yeah, so it's kind of forged the path into this, you know, growth and figuring out what the heck I'm doing next.
I don't know how you manage it all. Like, I don't know where you get, do you have like extra time in your day somewhere that you can find? Is there 30 hours in your day versus my 25? I mean, I don't know.
Oh, Don, you, says you. I mean, I don't know how the hell you guys do what you do. So I feel like everybody says that looking out, like from the outside looking in, they're just like, I don't physically get it. Like, I don't understand how it works. And it's like building blocks, right? Like, I was with Anytime for 9 years. You know, I've been with Clean Eats for 6 years since we started. So I didn't, you know, you build, you know, and the beginning was slow, right? It took me 7 years to do a second concept. And then it took me, what, I think another 2 years to do a third. And then they start multiplying faster because you kind of learn your roadmap. You learn, you know, I've learned my structure. But I have said, I'll always say, the reason I think the main reasons I've been able to grow are, one, I'm good with money. I'm fiscally responsible. I'm kind of psycho with it. I'm very in touch with my money. And I think that helps, you know, I think that's, obviously that's important. Money doesn't grow on trees. You got to take care of it. You got to make sure it's there. It's working for you. And then number two is my employees. I mean, I'm just like, I've been exceptionally, exceptionally lucky. I have, every manager I've ever hired has stayed with me to this day. I've never lost anyone. Everyone from day one they start for me, they're still with me. My Smoothie King managers both used to work, be managers for me at Clean Eats. I moved them there, so they've been with me since day one at Clean Eats. My two Clean Eats managers at Mentor have been with me since day one. My two Clean Eats Westlake managers have been with me since day one. My managers, you know, at each estate, my GM at my bar has been with me since day one. So, I mean, knock on wood, I feel like I shouldn't put this out in the universe, but yeah. So when you have strong people that, you know, are good people and have good work ethic and show up and you empower them to lead, support them. And, you know, we've always, I've told every franchisee I've ever trained, we profit share. We're transparent on the profit and we cut it off for these guys. And I think that's huge. You know, and so that's how, you know, that's how is the people underneath each and developing those people. I'm actually feeling like I should be doing more. And that's kind of my next step stage is I want to start like reinvesting a lot of myself back because the growth has been great, but I feel like it's torn me apart from each entity quite a bit while I focus on what's next, 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 next. So, but yeah, you know how it is. It's all your people.
No, I do. I absolutely do. Somebody was just, I was having this conversation with somebody the other day. I think it was the last discovery day that we had, as a matter of fact. And we always take them to lunch at the end of the discovery day. And we always go sit at the patio at the Racine store. And one of them asked me, you know, what do I think, in my opinion, is the most common, what did he call it? The most common personality trait that your top, like, 10% of your owners have that you think contributes to the success. And I didn't even hesitate to think about it. And I think I answered it in less than 2 seconds. I said, they're natural born leaders. Every one of them are. And I can go down that list right now and name every one of you guys that are on that list. And that's the common theme between you guys, you know, especially the multi-unit owners is because they are very, very good at developing people and building a team and getting those people to buy into their mission, not only the mission of the brand, but the mission behind, you know, that particular owner's reason for being here and reason for doing what they do. They get buy-in and the staff trusts them and they have very little turnover. And I think that is the number one contributor to the success of the top 10% of our owners for sure.
Yeah. It's like when you go into I met with a guy. He owns like 42 Dunkin' Donuts. He's an interesting guy. He told me to read the book Multi-Unit Ownership, which I have not yet read, but I really need to. It's on my like do this as soon as possible list. Because I just kind of asked him, like, I don't like I felt like that when I was talking to him, which was maybe a year ago, I kind of was starting to get overwhelmed. I felt like I can't, like, how do I do this? Like, and I'm like, how do you get to 42? Like, I'm barely making it through what I have now. And that's kind of like he painted a picture. He's like, you get to choose your path as an entrepreneur. You can either be basically what I was at Anytime Fitness. Now, regardless of whether I was 10% or 100%, I was the in there owner, right? Like the face of the brand, the one doing the, every day, all day. And I did love that, but I didn't think it was like a forever path for me because there's no growth in that because the business can't sustain without you. The owner leaves, like it's all on, like there was no one else doing what I was doing, right? And that works for me for a long time. And it works for some people forever. Like, the business owners, like I think of like remember Don when we went to that restaurant in were we in St. Louis? And when the owner came to our table and he was like an older guy. He was like I don't know, 70s, but he was still in a suit. He was coming to every table, checking in on every table, and he
That
was the
was
owner.
Dominic's, the Italian restaurant.
Yes. So I remember thinking about that and being like, this man chose path one. Like he loves this restaurant. I mean, the restaurant was like pristine. Remember, like the staff was just, I mean, everything was perfect. And you could tell, remember you called him out. You're like, look at him. He's in his 70s and he's still nitpicking like this dude, this, he's still doing the grind and making sure everything's perfect. And that's like a wonderful and legitimate way to make a living to be, I mean, there's so much pride of ownership in that, like being that single business owner that lives it, breathes it, shows up at work every day, is an example for your employees, holds your employees to a high standard. And like that type of ownership, basically the idea is that business is probably operating at 100% of its capacity. The owner is there every day invested, and that's that. And so that's that one opportunity for entrepreneurship. And then there's this other opportunity, which is the owners find, inspire, grow, and employ great people so that they aren't that person, but they can multiply. And you get to pick. And sometimes the multiplying isn't even more profitable because sometimes you have a couple that in your portfolio that do well and a couple that don't. And sometimes the one at 100% could really, depending on the model, could be even more profit. It's not even necessarily a financial thing. It's just kind of like what you want. Do you want to be in your business every day? Do you love that? Are you passionate about that? Or do you want to lead others, and over here and have multiple units? And so I've done both, but that was really interesting to me. I'm like, you're right. Like entrepreneurship can kind of look two different ways. You can be, and if you're going with the multi-unit option, if you're going with the empowering people to lead each, then you've got to be a leader. You've got to be able to identify good people, train good people, and it's a different skill set.
So I know one of the questions that I wanted to ask you, and I think other people that are going to listen to this are going to wonder this same thing. You're a part of multiple different franchises, right? And they're all in different phases or ages of their development. Obviously, we're probably the youngest one. And then you have two Smoothie Kings, right? And then is the Bar Taco franchise, or is that
It's a licensee. It's like a franchise, but it only has 19 units, so we're licensees.
And then you just opened a vitamin shop, right? So, what is, talk about some of the pros and cons of seeing growth along the way in these concepts. And the reason why I want to ask this is because I think that's kind of, we're at a crossroads right now with Clean Eats, meaning we're still, if you ask some, we're still considered emerging. They always say in the franchise world, once you get to 100 units, you've officially made it. Well, we're there. I mean, we've done that. But I still think there's a lot of things and a lot of components within our brand in every angle, like from marketing to operations to technology, that we're still in like infant stages of, that other brands who've been around for, longer than a decade and have a couple hundred units have gotten perfected, and it works like a machine. Like I'm not too familiar with it, but I would almost be willing to bet you that if I got online and I looked up Smoothie King's app, I'm sure they have an app, I bet it blows the dog piss away from ours. And then I know that Vitamin Shoppe has a really intricate online setup as well. Like some of the components that these brands have that they've developed as they age is incredible to see. But like from your perspective of somebody that's been in a baby franchise, taking those first steps, talk about some of the differences between some of the mature brands that have it, I'll just call it what it is, have it more on lockdown where you don't have some of the freedoms and leeways that you still have here.
You know what, though? To be honest, like, I'm just thinking about the pros and cons between the systems and whatnot. Like, I love Smoothie King. Okay, great leadership at that brand. Much lower AUV. It's just different, quick service. You know, it has its pros and cons. It's a little bit of an easier model to pop up. It's just smoothies. You know, you don't need as much talent on your team outside of your manager. Not that I don't have talented employees, but but honestly, like when I started with Smoothie King, our payment processor went down like 6 times in my first 6 weeks. It was horrible. Like we could not take payments. Like we had a line of cars went, and they made some changes. They went. We used to have WorldPay as a payment processor. They moved to PowerPay, which Cleanies also did. And then we just had a convention for that brand and they're like, hey, our app needs vast improvements. Here's the new app. It's rolling out in 3 months. And I remember our app with Smoothie King would, like, if people forgot to add their rewards and they were at the checkout cart and they were like, oh, I want to add my reward, it would delete their whole order and they'd start over. Or it would accidentally route them to the wrong store. And so, you know, I'm sure from your position being a franchisor, it's easy to reflect on like the shortcomings of your brand and like, oh man, we need to improve in this area. And it's like very overwhelming. Like what should we prioritize first? Like, but it's actually not that different than the more established brands. I mean, I see it in every brand where, I mean, yeah, I can just keep thinking of more examples. Like it just seems like every concept is evolving, identifying shortcomings, trying to build on them. And it's not always, you know, that like, it's not always like a perfect, I mean, I'm trying to think of an example with Clean Eats. Like, we've definitely launched things that ended up being worse than it was before and being like, well, shit, that didn't work. Let's fix that. And, like, that's how, you know, we even see that. Like, hey, we tried this. Like, Smoothie King just came out with smoothie bowls. They came out with smoothie bowls, like, 12 years ago, and it failed. And they did it, and then they took them away. They revamped it. Now, 12 years later, they think it's ready to emerge again. I hope they're right, because now we have them. It's not even always, like, a perfect path to improvement, even with a more established brand. So, I mean, they all have, all the brands have pros and cons. I don't know. Like, it's funny. People are like, why did you diversify so much? It's like, it wasn't really intentional. It just kind of like how the cookie crumbled. I originally didn't do a second Clean Eats because my first Clean Eats back in the day, we didn't have like a strong, like Stevens Food Group wasn't killing it as our supply chain management company. Like we didn't always know what we weren't going to get on our trucks. Like, you know, we used to have so much more like hardcore cooking elements, and it was so hard for me. The first one, I was scared to do a second one. So that's why I went to an easier concept. I'm like, dude, I finally have this down. I could never replicate this. I can never do this again. And then I remember I was training franchisees at Mentor. And as I'm watching us train them, I'm thinking, dude, if they could do it, I could definitely do a second one. Like, what am I doing? Like, and I've been very transparent with you and with anyone before. Clean Eats is my most profitable model. And that's in the percent of my revenue that I bring to the bottom line and in just the simple amount of money I make, both. So, I remember Mike and I were looking at our numbers and being like, why the hell aren't we doing a second Clean Eats? Like, what are we doing? You know, But it was a fear thing. I was scared. I was like, can I do it again? I felt like I just kind of lucked out that I figured it out at Mentor. And I honestly felt like, oh shit, I can never replicate this again. I don't have it in me. I just got lucky. And then that proved to be not true. I was so excited to see that our second store was in the top 15 in that report you sent out. So both of our stores in the top 15. So I was like, oh shit. Okay. We did get it again. Hired great people. I was able to train them at my Mentor store with my amazing people at Mentor. And we were able to replicate and have a beautiful, wonderful store that's been embraced by the community out there that still has a lot of room to grow. But yeah, so I don't know. I really don't think that Clean Eats is that different in the way that we've, you know, grown, like, always. I mean, I just keep thinking of things like my other brand, like, they just changed marketing companies. Like, just like Clean Eats got rid of Brand Amplifier, which, by the way, I liked them. But to do, like, see what was next, like, that's still happening in every system. It just seems like every system is trying to figure it out, right? Like, and the world is ever changing. So infancy or not, I think that just kind of comes along with the territory.
Yeah, somebody asked me, I get most of these questions at Discovery Days, right? Because they're coming in, they want to know everything from front door to back door. So that's where I get most of these questions from. But, you know, they were asking about that on, well, how do you, you know, how do you guys make decisions like this? Who do you, what kind of data do you use? And I just kind of looked at them and I'm like, man, we don't. I said, we just formed a franchise advisory council like 3 years ago.
Right.
The first 2 or 3 years we were a franchise, we didn't have one. We just kind of winged it and tried to figure it out, you know. And I just tell them, I'm like, look, I've been very fortunate over the last, you know, 9 years of us being a brand that I've gotten to be close friends with some of the biggest CEOs in this industry, like Jersey Mike's, Tropical Smoothie, guys that have ran big brands. And every time I get on a phone call with them and I start telling them, you know, things that we're thinking about doing or processes that we've tried and failed or anything like that, they just kind of laugh and they were like, yep, we remember that. And yeah. So that kind of makes me feel good. I'm like, okay, well, maybe I'm not, you know, that big of an idiot if we if we took this route and it and we failed and they tried the same thing, you know, it just kind of makes me feel better. But
yeah,
I don't know. I'm kind of our own worst critic sometimes, and I always want to set the bar as high as we can and try to hit it and not settle just to make our life easier here in the office, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, I've always been like, man, I don't envy Don and Yvonne, because, you know, it's one thing to just try to like focus on your own four walls, but for you to have no, like, not to throw this on you, but the pressure of a system on your back. And I mean, what you've created is incredible. I mean, it's just nuts, isn't it? Like, it's just nuts. And, but now you got that pressure of making sure, you know, you got all these independent businesses, you know, within this brand and making sure you're doing everything you can for them. So yeah, I don't envy your position. It's tough, but yeah, I mean, at some point you just got to try things, see how they land, see what we can do. And then use the experience to get better. But I mean, that the immense growth in the Clean Eats system, the immense improvement to process and procedures since we started, is the reason we opened a second location. And so, second location has been so easy. It hurts. I almost want to like, am I dreaming? Like, it's been, you know, and so that it's cool. It's cool to see that now scaling this concept with all the improvements you guys have made is so simple. I mean, simple might be a stretch, but you know, fairly follow the rule book and it'll flow for you. So you're doing a good job.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. But I mean, we couldn't do it without you guys. And, you know, people say, well, I don't know how you do what you do. Well, all I do really, in a nutshell, and I know this is going to sound really weird, but my number one goal and my number one job is you guys. If you guys aren't making money and you guys aren't successful, neither are we. And so the biggest struggle with my job is the relationship piece of it. And, you know, Yvonne's job and the other guys here in the office, their job is a little bit different. But mine, at the end of the day, is the relationship piece of it. And I have to figure out how to lead from the front and learn how to communicate with each one of you guys differently. Which that brings me to my last question for you. You know, you've got 5 or 6 different brands that you run. You've got a staff in each one of them. Do you find yourself fighting that or having trouble with that? Because I think your staff at all these different locations are different age ranges. I couldn't imagine, and I mean, I deal with that in ours too. I mean, but it's a little bit different for me. We're one brand, one company, one system. You've got multiples and then multiple age ranges. So how do you do that? How do you manage different teams and different brands at different age ranges and keep it all together?
You know, I don't know. Like,
because I know you don't drink, and I drink, so.
Yeah, and the me not drinking thing is, I always say, is like a part of my story too. Like, that was a decision I made at an Anytime Fitness conference. I got blackout shit faced, and I was chosen the next day to be one of the top owners in the system to speak as on a council. And I remember I was the youngest by far, and I think I was the only female. And I was like still drunk for it. Like, I literally woke up and I'm like, I also remember I like woke up by chance. Like, I was like, oh shit, that's in like 40 minutes. And that was, I had this like real hard talk with myself. Like, you're a moron, first of all. Second of all, like, you're just coming out of the cusp of maybe being something. And I feel like you have a path, like one of two paths. Cause that was kind of the way I always drank. I wasn't like a daily drinker, but when I drank like that. And so it created a lot of, I had a lot of those moments where I was like, oh shit. And then also like you're in front of your staff, like they're keeping their shit together, but you're the moron that's, you know, wasted coming in at 4. Like it's just, you know, and I just had this like kind of crossroads. At least I felt like it was a crossroads. And I was like, I want to be successful and I want to be respected. And I quickly realized that I wasn't being respected when I was drinking. Like no one was like, wow, I'm really impressed by you. Like if they went out drinking with me. And so I said, okay, I can't drink anymore. And I remember I was 29 and I was like, I'm going into my 30s. I'm going to be a badass motherfucker. I'm not going to be a moron anymore. I'm not going to be the one still drunk. I want people to go, damn, like she is killing it. Like, that's just what I wanted. Like, it, you know, everyone wants something different. That's just what I wanted. I wanted to be, you know, when people said, oh, she's building an empire, I'm like, damn straight. Like, I wanted that. And so I realized I wasn't going to be able to drink and do it. I mean, just, everyone else in my life drinks because no one drank like me. So like, I'm not against drinking. I own a bar. I'm not like, you know, but for me personally, I was able to, and you know, that wasn't my first fuck up, you know, there were plenty. So I realized, okay, you've had enough tries at this. It's not working. So you need to stop drinking. And I haven't drank since. And I undoubtedly my success is tied to that. For me, that's 100, you know, it was the right choice for me. I feel so confident every year that goes, I never said like, I'm never drinking again. I didn't want to like put that out there. Cause I just felt like that was too much pressure. I'm just like, I'm not drinking right now. Cause I recognize it's not doing me any favors. And then years turn into years. I was like, dude, I just feel no interest in getting back into it. I like who I am now. And I distinctly recall not really being super pumped about the person I was then. So anyways, but I do think that helps. I feel like, you know, I'm obviously, you know, I've been 100% aware in my life for the last 7 years since I quit drinking. And that's like interesting to think about, like, because when we use substances, we're taking ourselves out of our reality. And I have been in my reality, good, bad, or otherwise, living in it, fully aware, fully conscious for the last 7 years. And I think you scale that out and it's a big part. So going back to your question about people, like, you know, I think it gives me more, you know, I could improve on my self-help habits and, you know, giving myself personal time and things, but I mean, I'm there for my people like 7 days a week. I'm aware, I'm there. I can help. I can respond. I can be there for everybody. And, you know, and I hope that there's a respect variable, with, you know, people I employ, they respect me. They believe that I'll treat them right and I'll do what I can for them. And I do, and sometimes, you know, we all have our doubts, right? Like, I wonder if I'm doing good enough or if I am a good boss. And then I had these franchisees from Clean Eats that I just spent, you know, I was with all day yesterday. And they had been with my team all week. They ended the week with me because I was out of town. And they were like, man, I got to tell you, your teams at both stores just, like, said the nicest things about you and how great you are and how great it is to work for you. And I was like, shit, really? Oh, damn. Okay, good. Like, so, you know, it was so great to hear that. And not that like they don't express that to me, but I don't know. It's just reassuring that when you're not in the room, that's what's being said. And
yeah.
So it's good to like, okay, I'm doing something right. You know, that's kind of the feeling.
That's awesome. I know that's going back to the self-help and the, you not drinking. Her and I have battled with that here recently. Not to say that, you know, we have a drinking problem or anything, but we've kind of came to the realization that we're like, we have to do something, because I've always said that, you know, I enjoy a glass of bourbon here and there on the weekends. And then just the stress and anxiety from work, it was very easy for me to sit there and have one and then one turn into like five or six.
Right.
And then you, next thing you know, you're drunk, you're going to bed, and you're hungover the next day. And I'm like, this is getting out of, they're like, this is retarded. If I'm doing this 4 or 5 nights a week, this is dumb, you know? And then you don't want to train, you don't want to work out. And then your personal health just starts going down the drain and you start second guessing everything that you're doing. And I'm like, yeah. Why am I doing this? This is stupid. But,
you know, I always get careful around this subject because I never judge anyone else's decisions. And I don't think giving up drinking is like right for any, like every person, but this is just, maybe this is just me being like a cocky shit, But I believe that people who don't drink are stronger minded and stronger than, I'm not going to say than all people who do, but making that conscious choice to be better when you could just very easily do what everyone else does, I think is like a very loud example of strength and discipline. You know, just going back to like bodybuilding, like, you know, it's very easy to drink because it's just easy, right? Like, I mean, it was always easy. Like, shit, let's just have a, let's go get a margarita. I'm tired. Or, you know, it's much harder to say, I'm going to choose to be a badass and be the best version of myself today, tomorrow, at the wedding this weekend, at the party the weekend after that. And I'm not giving up on happiness in my life. I personally am much happier not like hating on myself all the time and feeling like shit, like you said, hungover. So, yeah, I think it's like, I used to look at it differently. I used to look at it as a punishment. I used to be like, man, I'm not drinking because I'm a dumb drunk. Like when I drink, I suck. These people can drink responsibly. They get to do it. I don't get to do it. You know, and so I used to kind of like kick myself over it. And then over the years, it really switched because there were a lot of things that would happen where, you know, other people would get wasted or make kind of do something that, and I would never judge those people, but I would be like proud that I wasn't that. And I'd be like, damn, it feels good to not be that person that I definitely would have been. I probably worse than that person was. And that builds like that confidence. So yeah, I think, you know, I'm in the bar industry. Hey, everybody go ahead and drink if you want to. But if you're like compelled to like be that next step version of yourself, I think that it's badass. And I think it's one of the, you know, the strongest people can say, yeah, that shit's not doing anything for me. So I'm just not going to do it. Even, I know it's not going to be easy. I know everyone else is going to be like, why not, man? But I'm just not going to do it. And I, because I don't want to, you know, I don't have that. People are always like, oh, I don't think I have a problem. And I'm like, fuck having a problem. Who cares? If you just want to be better, then that's something you cut. So, you know, I don't preach it for that many people, but I'll be honest, I'm very proud of it. And I think it's like, my, you know, I feel like I'm a badass because of that decision that I made. So it's cool. You know, it's cool to, and you see people who do dry January and then it turns into dry February because they're like, oh shit, I kind of think I might be onto something. So,
yeah.
You know, it's leveling up, you know, it really is.
I agree.
Yeah.
Well, Anna, thank you so much for taking time out of your day. Your story is amazing. It's inspiring. And I hope that when other people listen to it, they feel the same way. So I just really appreciate you taking the time and joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
And thank you for everything that you do for us. I mean, you're a savage within our brand, so I appreciate it every day.
Love Clean Eats. I got my tattoo.
All right, guys. Till next time.